Chops TV.
You will be chopped.
Know what that means? Licking my chops.
Today I will show you how to do a karate chop.
Simply saying, no, he doesn't have the chops to do what it takes.
New thing. I'm busting chops.
Welcome to Chops TV, featuring Jennifer Lopez. Now here's Chops.
Chops TV, Chops and J-Lo with you, and we just voted, so good for us. Everybody, go out and vote. It would be too late once you're listening to this because we're not on live radio, but I hope you voted,
yeah,
at least.
But if you follow me on socials, then you would have been reminded yesterday that today was voting. So
there you go.
Follow me on Instagram.
Follow her on Instagram.
JNL Lopez underscore.
Follow us on Twitter at underscore Chops TV, at Chops 971, at Jen Lopez underscore on Twitter too, I think.
It's it's Jen Lopez underscore. Yeah. I don't know who Jen Finch is.
No, nobody knows who Jen Finch is. All right, so let's jump right in because we've got about 300 million years worth of content to cover this week. So you were big on this because you love these shows, the nature shows, the Our Planets, then there was multiple Our Planets on Netflix. Then there was Prehistoric Planet on Apple, which we had to get Apple TV Plus for a month so that you could watch that. And now Netflix's, I guess, kind of answer to that is Life on Our Planet, which is different than Our Planet because it goes all the way back in time. Does eventually get to modern day, but it goes all the way back in time to the beginning, or roughly the beginning of life on our planet. And that makes sense. That's why it's called Life on Our Planet. Mm-hmm. So about 300 million years ago, right? Is that kind of how far it went? You were paying attention to the earlier episodes more than I was, but
yeah,
about 300 million years ago, life started to cultivate itself in the oceans, and eventually those things got out of the water.
I love hearing your breakdown of this.
Then they became mammals, and then they became humans. And that's what this is all about. And so eventually, about episode 3, I was like, okay, I think I'm in. And I started to watch with you, and I got to see all the dinosaurs. Love me some dinosaurs, and here we go.
So let me preface this by saying that I am a little horn doggy dog. I get super turned on for nature documentaries. Pretty much documentaries of any kind that have to do with like history or nature. Just like sign me up. I'm set. So when this came out and is Steven Spielberg and there were going to be dinosaurs, I was like, oh, this is going to be sick. You don't like them because I like to sort of unwind and take a breath with them. So I'll put them on like right before bed and it creeps you out. You don't like the noise, especially I've noticed like the water-centric episodes.
I do not like serene noises. They have the exact opposite effect on me.
That's why you don't like classical music. It makes you uneasy. So I don't usually get to watch them when you're in the house. But this one I was like, I need to watch this because it's really good. That first episode took me by surprise. So that usually how it goes, they set up the concept of the show, then they'll take episodes to highlight either like geographical locations or time periods. So like Jurassic, like Triassic, stuff like that.
Cretaceous.
It's the Cretaceous period. Yeah.
Crustacean is the thing in the water.
Correct. So that's usually how they break this down. This first episode, though, flew by. So it pretty much covered the idea of the entire show. So that first episode, you go from like 300 million years ago to basically like right before man, right? Right before like the evolution of primates.
Okay.
Which was alarming because like 20 minutes in, I'm like, oh my God, we just skipped 60 million years. So that got me hooked for sure. And I think after a couple of episodes, you signed on. It may or may not have anything to do with like...
When I decided I was into it and I was like, okay, I think I can get behind this. It was when they were talking about the first predator. It was like that shrimp that was going after the little bug that had all the armor. And it actually lost to the bug. The bug one, and for some reason that finally grabbed me and I was like, okay, I think I can get into this. And then you get into more recognizable animals, or at least siblings, cousins, however you want to call it, of animals that you know, whether they're dinosaurs or prehistoric mammals. Mm-hmm. And okay, I can ground myself and connect to this a little bit. But no, overall, not a huge fan of the nature documentary, but big fan of the documentary Jurassic Park. So that kind of got me in, and I was like, okay, I'll watch this. And it was seven episodes or something like that, so it didn't take too long for us to get through. We got through it in a weekend.
Yeah, based on a true story, Jurassic World.
Yes, exactly.
So what I found, so two things. Once we got to the Jurassic with like T-Rexes, audible cheers from the couch. Everyone was super into it. I knew you were hooked.
Everyone, me and you.
Yes, everyone. Kitty, too, was super into it. But it's also interesting because each time I watch these shows, the dinosaurs look a little bit different. So, like, when once you get, like, past, like, the age of whatever, the arthropods or whatever at the bottom of the ocean, then you get into the age of the dinosaurs, you're like, yeah, but they just keep finding out more things about these animals. So they look sort of the same, but maybe this one has feathers now, or this one has hair, you know, stuff like that, which keeps me engaged.
Well, because we were interested, because a lot of them ended with the suffix saurus, you know, Tyrannosaurus. And I was like, well, what is that actually, what does saurus actually mean? Because they put it at the end of all those ones, and we looked it up, and it means lizard. And so that's what we've always had in the, especially in the pop culture world of it, that like, oh, they're big lizards. So they're scaly, and they've got the skin like that. It's taut. There's nothing on it. It's just that. And yeah, as time has gone on, they figured out that certain ones have feathers. They still, I guess T-Rex, not in that group. T-Rex still just
it had some, depend.
Oh, did it have a little bit on the head?
Yeah, it had like longer like hairs.
Yeah, but like, I mean, it was 30 years ago when Jurassic Park came out. So like just like the idea of what you see in those movies is not what science kind of generally agrees on now of what these things looked like and how closely related they are to birds. And so feathers are something that goes in there. And then there's other animals that you're just like, what the hell is that thing?
Yeah. And it's interesting too, because they don't teach you this way in schools, that there are multiple like calamity, like catastrophic extinction events that happened over the course of Earth's history. So I think now we're on like 7 or 8. But there were previous versions of the dinosaurs that was not at the same time as like the age of reptiles, right? So when looking at movies like Jurassic Park, it shows such like a linear focus as far as how we understand and interpret things. Like once we make a discovery, okay, well, they are reptiles, so they all look reptilian, but that's not necessarily the case. And I think like as we learn more, it just broadens our either imagination or understanding of like the actual evolution of animals over the course of Earth's history.
And it's so hard to put it into context for humans, because our time, even going all the way back to BC, of like the time that there have been humans, that is at least like recorded type history stuff, is such a short amount of time. So we see things that happen over a few hundred years and we think, oh man, look at the change that can happen here. And then you kind of relate to it that way, but you get taken aback a little bit, because to actually show this over the time that evolution takes and the changing of these animals, especially after a mass extinction event, and like they have to repopulate the Earth with all different sorts of species, and where do they come from and how do they make up? There is this trick that the show plays on you where 10 million years doesn't seem like a lot of time.
No.
It's like it's not a lot of time until we get to 100 million years. Because it was like 75 million years mm-hmm. ago. And we're like, oh, we're only, you know, 65 million is the famous time for when the dinosaurs had their mass extinction event. And we're like, oh, we're only 10 million years away from that. And then I was like, yeah, it's 10 million years.
Yeah.
Like it's actually not close, but in the actual history of the Earth, it's somewhat close.
Yeah. Also for context, there was 20-ish minutes left and it's talking about life on our planet. And they talked a lot about mammals and teasing the idea of like this like single common ancestor for mammals, our weird little freak boy.
He was a little freak boy.
He was a freak boy.
He had like an older cousin who was a bigger little freak boy.
Yeah.
But this one was a little bit more docile.
Yeah, but they were all hunched down on fours, just covered in like skin flesh.
They had these like kind of weird beak type things. But also teeth.
Yeah. Very weird little freak boy.
Didn't like it.
So anyway, so they're teasing this idea of like the evolution of man, right? To something that we would recognize. So there was 20 minutes left. And I said, how? And we have 2.5 million years left. And I said, how on earth are we going to get to this? So within the last 10-ish minutes or so, they go from agriculture, the discovery of agriculture, to then immediately the Industrial Revolution. So that is how much time is being covered within like 5 to 6 minutes. There's no way that you can make a show as comprehensive as something as like life on our planet.
Well, and like I was saying, a $2.5 million jump is something that seems kind of pedestrian once you've been watching the show. But when you finally see it in the context of humans, it's just like, oh man, boom, 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 boom. Like we're going so fast because we just are so much more detailed when we study human history than, you know, that's why they're all periods. And those periods are millions of years long when you look back into the prehistoric world. With that, because you're not fully, like, they spend so little time in each one that you move so quickly that you kind of forget things that you do know. And if you were really thinking about it, you would remember. But there was one point where we're like, oh, yeah, it's still like Pangaea.
Dude, fucking who remembered that? So clearly I know what Pangaea is, right? I'm a reasonable person.
Yeah, but the previous episode was talking about like the creation of land. And so like that like seems so abstract.
And they're showing like every time that they like have either like a mass extinction event or like they go forward really, really far in time, like 150 million years or something like that, they will show the globe. And in my head, I'm seeing this globe, but I'm still looking for Florida. You know what I mean?
I'm still looking for the shapes of countries. You know what South America looks like. You know what Africa looks like. If we were down here, you'd see Australia.
But in my head, like, you know how like you can observe something and your brain sort of flips it around, like kind of like being dyslexic, right?
Your brain fills in spaces to make things easier for you. It's why you can read words that have the correct letter on the beginning and end, but everything's jumbled in the middle. Your brain knows what's going on.
Yeah. Or in the opposite way too. Like you can read something and your brain is jumbling the letters, right? Mm-hmm. And that's why you can't read, right? So that was happening for me when I'm looking at this map, and I know that I'm looking at like a single landmass, but in my head it looked like the topographical map that we know.
You're just so used to looking at it. I mean, there's a globe right behind us on the shelf right now.
Yeah.
You know what the Earth looks like. So, yeah, as long as it... That's why, as like a kid, you can... Or even just like in normal like cartoon type stuff, you can really draw shorthand of a globe that's blue and there's green and there's shapes. And it really doesn't actually have to be accurate if it's kind of in the background, which the point of this isn't about Pangaea. So this every once in a while, they would show like bigger, like kind of from space perspective, and that's where you would see these. And it took us a while to be like, oh yeah,
dude, Pangaea,
all the land is just together right now because it was all made on its own. Of the mass extinction events, I think it was the third one that I was most interested in. I mean, the final one with the comet, we'll get to that. That we'll finish with that. The third one though, where they were talking about the gas that like was let up and then it created the acid rain,
CO2,
and then it created acid rain and it was heating up everything, so they were like cooking themselves alive, and then those gases eventually like re-escaped, and then that started more land, and so it is really interesting stuff to see how all of this came to be. And then as I was watching it too, I was like, well, it is weird too, because it's kind of like still somewhat like how proven, like they can't, you know, there's not like anybody there who wrote it down. So how theoretical is it versus how much is this like, we know that there was acid rain after this event. We know that the CO2 levels raised the temperature this high and that the animals were affected this way. Or how much of it is our best guess based on what we know is this. Because they present everything as their fact.
Because
that's what you would do if you're making this documentary. You don't want to go, we think it might have been this.
Well, they do sometimes throw that stuff in there too, like our best approximation, this is probably what they look like and stuff like that. And I, you know, most people I think take it with a grain of salt. I will say, though, that one, if you think that this show is like boring or, you know, stuff like this is boring, there are always things that like you didn't anticipate finding interesting that then become like cheer out loud moments. Like how many ways that the earth can kill you, right? So like aside from the comet, many of these mass extinction events is the earth going through its cycles and destroying life on earth, basically. You know, almost destroying life as we know it on Earth.
Yeah, destroying most of life. They, yes. You know, often they would talk about the amount of species that are on Earth and then the mm-hmm. percentage of what was taken down. And then after it, they would start to show kind of the after effects of that mass extinction event. And the little arthropod or whatever yeah. would come out of the ground. Or the tiny little mammal was actually underground. Usually it's underground. That yeah. is the safe bet. Everywhere else, even in the ocean, can get you yes. in these events.
Or like when the tectonic plates start shifting and there's volcanoes and stuff and it just heats the earth's crust to a point where nothing on land can survive, and a lot like in shallow waters also can't survive. But then they go down into the ocean, those little creepy crawlies, they somehow manage to survive a lot off the carcasses of the animals that are falling out of the land into the ocean by tsunamis that were caused by the tectonic shift. So it's like a whole series of events that are like really interesting to watch and learn about. Another cheer out loud moment comes not, let me say it this way. It is not dissimilar to how when you can critique your own country, but as soon as someone says something bad about French fries and that the French do it better, you're all of a sudden like bleeding red, white, and blue. The same thing happened for me. We're like, these colors don't bleed. That's happened to me when they were pitting reptiles versus mammals.
Oh, that we were totally in the mammal yes. group. We were like, oh yeah, go mammalia. Yeah. This is going to happen. We're the best.
Like, it's our time. Let's fucking go. Like, episode 6, what's up?
Well, that's like kind of in the show too. They talk about T-Rexes at one point and they call them the world's most famous predator. And I'm like, well, if you think about it, I would think amongst humans, the most famous predator in the history of the world,
Jared from Subway,
would be humans, not a specific human.
Oh, right. No.
Just humans in general. We've done a lot to take down prey yeah. in our time on Earth. But T-Rexes, yeah, probably a close second. You also really enjoyed when they met up and we thought we were going to get a T-Rex fight, and you immediately go, they're fucking.
Oh, immediately. I am honestly kind of gross of me, but when you watch enough of these shows, you know when they're like setting up like an adversarial match versus when they're setting up a mating ritual.
Right. So that's another thing that you were, yeah, without Jen's commentary, I would say this is very appropriate for pretty much any age, because they don't actually show the fucking between the T-Rexes. They just allude to it and show them kind of doing mating dances and stuff. And the other, on top of that real quick, they also don't show a lot of violence. That's like they take a big wide angle, or they go off screen, or they keep it away from, they're on one side, whereas the carnage is kind of on the other side. So it's really not entering that stuff because a lot of it isn't real animals. Mm-hmm.
So firstly, rude that they don't show the fucking, because I want to know how they did it. How, just like mechanically with the little arms and balance,
and the big tails.
And the big tails. How are they getting down? So one, rude for not even like
you need
attempting
like a,
to show that.
Like a T-Rex Kama Sutra to let you know yeah. like what was the logistics here?
For science, I need to know. And then secondly, you're right. It's not like a hyper violent show, except when they show I forget what animals it was, but it was, you know, dinosaur going after goat or something like that. Like cat going after goat.
Okay.
In the Ice Age period.
And this is when they switched to real animals. Is that what you're saying? Because there was a mix of the CGI animals.
So they do, yes. Yeah. So they take, there are parts in every episode where they'll take basically a dinosaur and then follow its ancestral line to something in our modern day, an animal in our modern day.
An approximation of this animal nowadays.
Yeah. So like kind of like they're social behaviors and stuff like that, and how we can use that to infer what they were like in their contemporary, right? So it's doing one of those things where they're showing a cat trying to get a goat or corral a goat or whatever, and they both slip and fall off a cliff down to their death, slow pan out from the bodies, leaking blood onto the ice white snow.
Isn't one like decapitated?
Yeah. I mean, I was like, I'm sorry, didn't October end? I thought we were done with the horror. That was like, that was truly unsettling. So there's something for everyone.
While it's not visually that graphic, life on our planet does have lots of scenes, because I would know this, I just watched over 30 horror movies in the last month that are very much framed as horror scenes for you. And you're supposed to feel that way. That that's what they are going for.
The stalking of prey. And
yeah, and so when you sometimes don't even realize when they make that transition into real footage. So it's all real environments, except for like when they show the wide angles of Earth with the Pangea. Obviously, there's not images of Pangea in space. But everything else is real environments that they like superimpose these animals into. So it makes that dive into the real life stuff that they're actually filming, like real nature documentaries, much easier to, it doesn't feel jarring when they move on to that. And so sometimes you're like, oh, wow, this one's real. I'm actually watching these animals now. And I think they did a pretty good job of doing that. There are a few times where you can see the CGI. It doesn't look great. Textures are off.
But I've noticed fur texture is hard to do.
Cat walking.
Cat is hard to do. I don't know if this is a credit to James Cameron, but I don't, and like Avatar, but they really, really nail everything underwater as far as like CGI goes and those kinds of dinosaurs.
Mm-hmm.
The water looks fantastic.
Yeah, it does. And yeah, like the walking of animals that look close to animals we still have today.
It's just uncanny valley. Some of those just...
Yeah, because like we don't have dinosaurs. So it's pretty easy to accept that because of movies and things, that's how dinosaurs walk. Like that's something that we're used to. But seeing, a CGI, what kind of looks like a saber-toothed tiger, like an ancestor of that, who's not around now either. But yeah, they walk like a person on all fours, kind of. Like somebody doing like a bear crawl a little bit. Like they have like shoulders that are out front. It doesn't look right.
It's the shoulders, I think, is really hard to mimic that. Like motion, I think it looks too stocky almost. Like they all look like tanks, which is not right.
Yeah, so I would recommend Life on Our Planet. I thought it was really good, and I'm somebody who's not normally that into the big nature documentaries, but this one felt like more, because it covers so much time, it felt like useful knowledge to get, and not like little tiny tidbits of a specific animal, which is like a cool like fun fact to know, but it was almost educational in a way that like I know more about the periods of prehistoric time now. So I think it'd actually be great for like high schoolers. Like that would be a really good like thing to show in a science class to kids.
And for context too, just for comparison's sake, I think I briefly talked about Our Planet on one of the podcasts also, just briefly. But they spend half of an episode talking about the migration patterns of a single species of bird.
That's too much for me.
Too much for you. But I think this
arguably
version,
too much for you?
It was kind of close, especially because like these birds are on a very like remote island. Essentially, like they use like this little piece of land in the middle of the ocean. But like all the predators know that they go there to like mate and hatch and stuff, so they're just like waiting to get feasted on, and you follow a single bird and you're like, Jesus Christ, is this bird gonna make it? So it's very stressful to me, so I'm still into it. So no, I guess it's not too much for me. Other than that, I will say trigger warning for climate change, because like I was saying before, the last 5 minutes is basically a setup for like the Industrial Revolution and how we're essentially causing our next mass extinction event on this planet. So
because it all ends with, it's Morgan Freeman narrating it. So he had some really good, like classic band names that we wrote down.
Should I pull them up?
Yeah, we'll get to those. And he does a great job narrating it. But yeah, at the end, it's like it's almost like a warning or even a scolding of like all this stuff. And it's like, I get it. And we are two people who are here for trying to change things and you know, hopefully help our planet and everything. But it does feel a little bit heavy-handed at the end. They're going over T-Rexes, and then they show, like, a Komodo dragon, which, and you're like, man, these things still exist. They're so creepy looking. But they frame it, right at the end, they frame it as, actually, then the mammals took over the earth, and the biggest predator of all time showed up. And it's just, like, hunting.
Yeah, Jeff at a desk.
Right. Yeah, then it gets to the point where, yeah, right, you said earlier, Industrial Revolution, and then blah, blah, blah. So that does happen at the end. But all the other stuff is just kind of straight science. They kind of allude that they're getting in that direction.
Yeah.
There's not much to say back, you know, 200 million years ago about what's going on. Mm-hmm. Now, and then they just frame it at the end.
Comet, cool. Always fun to see a comet hit the Earth.
Very cool. And I won't even spoil all the things that happened. That one's the most comprehensive, the 65 million year ago one. That's probably the best part of the whole thing when they go over that. It's very sad at certain points, but we'll let you experience that for yourself. Real quick, some of Morgan Freeman's best band names. I think we wrote down two or three.
Yeah, I've got a couple. So the first one, Feasting for Extinction, my favorite.
That's
great,
a good one.
Great band name. Great band name. What kind of music?
Ska.
Ska?
No, it's not going to be ska. That's obviously like a death metal band.
Clearly. Underwater Flight.
Underwater Flight. I could see that as some sort of... Is that like a big jam band? You know, like a Jefferson Airplane type thing?
I was thinking more like... Boys Like Girls, Paramore, like that era of like punk rock.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. The last one is a pretty good transition into the next thing that we watched this week. Orphan's Halloween Party.
Yes. Yeah, so we watched A Haunting in Venice. It just kind of came up on our Hulu and we were like, wow, you know what? Let's check this out. And it only took us a few minutes into it that we're like, oh yeah, this is like a part of the series of everything. There's the Murder on the Orient Express, and there's the Death on the Nile, which came out last year. This one came out in September. It's already available on Hulu. If you have that, you can access it there. When I was looking into it today, it still had showings here in Columbus.
Yeah, there are two or three, I think.
Yeah, so I don't know if those are like the second run theaters or whatever, but you can still see it in theaters, possibly.
Dan Merle had a very good theory about that, why they're keeping that one in theaters so long. It's because, one, it's a series. Two, it's... I think attracting a bit of an older audience who like to go to the movies in the middle of the day. So they're still making a little bit of money on that train.
Well, and the fact that it's a series, it did have this isn't a bad thing. I don't mean this in a negative way, but it did have like the episodic procedural feel of like an episode of Law and Order, but full feature length, good budget, well-made, great actors. And so it's Kenneth Branagh, who has been the director of all three of them. And then the star, as he stars as, you're going to have to help me with this name, the detective Hercule Poirot.
P-O-I-R-O-T.
Poirot,
I think.
Hercule Poirot?
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
I don't know.
He plays the detective, so it's very similar to, if you're somebody who's familiar with Knives Out and Glass Onion, it's very similar to the Daniel Craig character of like, here is the detective and he's the greatest detective ever and he always can solve it. So after watching it, I would definitely be in for a Death on the Nile and Murder on the Orient Express to catch up with it that way. Yeah,
we might have to do a double feature.
So yeah, we watched the third one first, but we're going to go back and watch them because we really liked it. It was a good transition out of spooky season into whatever we're going to watch now, because this one's actually, they're all based on Agatha Christie novels. This one is loosely based on one called Halloween Party, but there's an apostrophe between the two E's at the end of Halloween. That must be like an old timey thing. But yeah, so a bunch of Agatha Christie novels have been redone with this guy as the main detective that is solving all the mysteries. And yeah, so what's his name? Kenneth Branagh, this movie was one of the things where I was like, man, what's going on? I recognize all these people, but I can't quite put my finger on where I know all of them from, aside from Tina Fey. I knew who Tina Fey was. That one was simple for me. I'm a big fan of 30 Rock. Okay. The Medium, I was like, I'm pretty sure that's Michelle Yeoh, who was just had a great starring role in Everything Everywhere All at Once. She got an Oscar, right? It's hard to keep... Everybody got an Oscar in that movie.
Yeah.
Practically. But okay, so I got her. Kenneth Branagh. I was like, Why do I recognize him? What has he been in? He's been in a ton of things, but then looking into it today, he's Lockhart.
Yeah.
From Harry Potter and
Gilderoyd Lockhart.
Chamber of Secrets, the second one, right? Yes. He turns Harry's arm into jelly by trying to heal a bone. To heal a bone is simple. To grow a new bone, that's the whole
thing. That's a whole different matter.
Right, exactly. Then the woman who owns the house, the matriarch of the house, she's wanting to get closure on her daughter's birth. So it seems. And I'm like, I recognize that lady too. It's Beth Dutton. It's Kelly Riley. And I was like, that's exactly who she is. And then when I was looking at hers, I realized that she's in Pride and Prejudice, which is your favorite movie of all time.
I thought I said that, though.
Maybe you did. But I texted you and I was like, Beth Dutton's in Pride and Prejudice?
And yep. Caroline Bingley.
And then the last one, the rest of people are just kind of character actors, a lot of TV acting and everything. But Jamie Dornan, I was like, that feels familiar too. And I was like, okay, it's not Henry Cavill. Because that was my first thought, that it was Henry Cavill. They kind of look alike. But I figured out, I was like, no, it's not Henry Cavill, but who is this? He's the 50 Shades of Grey guy.
Yep. He's in a ton of stuff too.
Yeah, as I was looking over the cast today, I was like, I knew these people, but I couldn't, there are things that I have seen but are kind of on the edge of my actual interest. I'm not a huge fan of Yellowstone. You're obviously the bigger Harry Potter fan. I've never really watched the 50 Shades movies.
Pardon?
Should we do a series?
A Valentine's Day special?
Maybe we will. But yeah, so then I finally connected all of those dots. So that was good. I felt like I was the detective putting everything together by simply typing the name of the movie into Google and clicking pictures of the characters. I'm a very good detective. No, but Perot is a much better detective, but he's kind of in retirement in this one. And Tina Fey's character, who's an author who writes about his escapades, wants to write a new book and get into it. So she goes and gets him. She brings him to the orphan Halloween party. We are just a few years post-World War II, so there's a lot of orphans. The lady who owns this giant house in Venice hosts this orphan party, but they're also going to have a medium come in and do a seance to try to contact her daughter who had committed suicide, and she wants to get to the bottom of what drove her to this. And there's ideas of, oh, this building is haunted because it was originally an orphanage and they let all the kids die in the basement after they got some sort of illness.
Yeah, cholera, plague, whatever.
Locked them in there, and you get to that eventually in it. But okay, I'm game. And so, like I said, a nice transition from Halloween into more normal movies as we got a little spooky, scary stuff. There was some, ooh, there's a ghost. Ooh, are you hearing voices? And it makes you question, at least it did me, are all of these characters real or are one of these an apparition that like only one or two of the characters are seeing? All in all, I don't want to ruin the mystery of it. It all tied together really well. And like we said, if this were a series, I would be into it. But I like that the movie also felt like they made the right choice to make it a movie. That it had enough to fill out this amount of time. And I'm glad that there's one that got to split the difference. As I've talked about this a lot with streaming, that people come up with an idea and they don't know whether or not it's a movie or a series. And a lot of times they pick wrong. And so they stretch a good idea out too thin in a series, or they have an idea that has a lot more meat on the bone and they end it at a movie. This one, it's all about that character. So you get a nice hour and 40 minutes with them, and I'm excited that there are two other movies with this detective character.
Yeah, first impressions, really good movie, surprisingly good. I saw it came on Hulu and was excited to watch it. I had heard about it. I really like Kenneth Branagh as a director. He directs a lot of great, fun, maybe some called kitschy movies or, you know, tentpole movies. But anyway, so very good. Just to comment on the actors thing, it seems like actors are drawn to these kinds of movies, like The Knives Out, the Wes Anderson ones, this one, because it feels almost like they get to chew the scenery. And, you know, it's not, you're not committing to a 10 movie deal or whatever, but you get to play a character that's basically like out of Clue, right? We're trying to find a whodunit, and you can do a lot with it as far as like, I guess, for lack of a better word, chewing up the scenery.
Yeah, and so there's good stuff for all the actors to go through. They get to wear period-specific costumes. A lot of them get to do accents. It looks like it was filmed actually in Venice, so that's a nice little trip for you to go and film this. It's super atmospheric, Kenneth Branagh, I thought did a really good job directing, from weird camera angles that make you feel uneasy. Kind of reminded me of, you've probably never played the original Resident Evil, but part of the horror video game of that, especially because the graphics aren't very great, it was on the first PlayStation, they would lock your camera angle in the top corner of something, or you'd enter a room and it would be a camera angle. It's not the same camera angle as when you left the previous room. And I got that feel from this, that there was a lot of stuff through windows, up in the corner, the banisters and stuff would be in between you and the characters sometimes. I think they did a really good job. It was really atmospheric with the rain and the water of Venice and the tiny little boats that they have to take everywhere. I got really into it. We just kind of threw it on because we were looking for something to watch before Monday Night Football last night, and it totally did it for us. So there's multiple bad actors of the characters. The actors, their performances are good. I'm saying of the characters, there's multiple bad actors. There's different things to try to figure out motive-wise and everything. So who did this? Who did that? Why did they do this? Why did they do this? That's something that gets all tied up. Again, I don't want to ruin it. I think I got close to maybe spoiling it, but I decided no. Changing a Chops TV rule, since it's also a relatively new movie as well. We're not going to fully spoil this one, but if you have Hulu, I would totally say see A Haunting in Venice.
You will be happy to know that I did not play Resident Evil 1, but I did watch my brother play it all.
Okay, so did you actually know what I was talking about there?
I did, yes.
Yeah.
Because I'm cultured.
Very cultured in Resident Evil. The video games...
Some would say even a Renaissance woman.
I would say the games are better than the movies. They made like 8 of them. I kind of like the first one. It's a really... It's kind of campy in a way, but it was a nice video game adaptation that like got some of what you're looking for Resident Evil. It has the dogs in there. And then at the end, one of the guys turns into a big... Spoilers for Resident Evil. One of the guys turns into one of the big monsters. But then it just... The second one, you get it going out into Raccoon City. It's okay. And then it just gets off the rails. And those movies are wild. They don't make any sense. They're crazy. It doesn't like... It defies logic what the Umbrella Corporation is able to do after the world has essentially ended, and why they are still doing it at the same time. So, as a big fan of zombie movies, I don't even think I've seen all the Resident... I mean, you know me. I will watch just about any zombie movie. I will give it a shot. And I don't think I've actually ever sat down and made sure I've watched all the Resident Evil movies, but I've seen probably at least 5 of them.
My biggest problem with the Resident Evil movies is that every time I see it on, especially those like first 2 or 3... It just makes me want to watch The Fifth Element. So then I'd rather watch The Fifth Element, I guess.
Mila Jovovich?
Jovovich or something.
Yeah, she's also in Dazed and Confused. We should watch that sometime. Maybe around the time school is supposed to be out, and then we can go over. Have you ever actually sat down and watched it?
Yes, I have. Okay. You've made me watch it like 3 times.
You've never watched Fast Times at Ridgemont High? Then we'll have to watch that one instead. How's that sound? Is that fair?
No.
I'm not sure how that's fair.
Now, just so you all know, he's about to like clockwork orange me, strap me to a chair and tape my eyelids open.
I would do nothing of the sort. So, yeah, a few key things from this movie that I would just like to point out as you're getting into it. 1947, Orphan Halloween Party, as we mentioned. Medium.
No. This movie has everything.
But I don't want to say a few other things I wrote down, and now I'm like, no, that would spoil it a little bit too much. So I'll leave it at that. A Haunting in Venice.
Precocious child.
Very precocious child. One other thing I watched this week, I like a little comedy in the afternoon. Throw on a little comedy. We don't get many of them, and you definitely don't get them in theaters anymore. We saw the one, basically, that we got this year with No Hard Feelings. And it's hard. I kind of get it from the studio standpoint with how easy it is to dump these on streaming. But the problem is you end up with these situations where people go, they don't make comedies anymore. And they don't put comedies in theaters anymore. They actually do still make comedies. And they don't have to be action comedies, something I am almost wholly against. Every once in a while, they're okay. But I really either make a comedy or make an action movie. I don't like the mixing of the two. I don't think it actually works.
That's okay.
This one, straight comedy, starring Awkwafina and Sandra Oh. Lots of other people show up. The premise of the movie, Awkwafina's character is somebody who has religiously watched a general knowledge Jeopardy type show for her, like in her entire life. And so she's great at it. She knows all the answers to everything. It's like a list one, too. They'd be like, name all the first ladies. And you have a certain amount of time to name as many as you can. So it's just a bank of knowledge based on one little prompt. And those are kind of all the questions. And so she's great at it. Her mom goes missing. Her mom turns up to have gambling debts. The people who have the gambling debt kidnap her geriatric pug and put out a ransom on it to get the money for the mom's gambling debt. Then she meets up with her sort of estranged sister, who's kind of like a retired party girl, but still a little wild. That's played by Sandra Oh. They team up to do this. So you get a little bit of a, you get a little bit of a road trip movie as they go and they're trying to qualify for the quiz show, but it's not the whole thing. It's like in the middle, which I don't know how many movies do that. Like go for like the feel of like the road trip stuff, but it's just a small portion of it. I like that at the end, you've got like the host of the quiz show is Will Ferrell and the reigning champ that she has to beat. And they set him up early as Jason Schwartzman, just playing a slimy, creepy guy. He's got like fake white big veneers. His character puts makeup on even on his hands so that he looks good when he's doing the quiz show. It's pretty funny. And he's like kind of, they frame him as he's gunning to take over Will Ferrell, who is framed as like a beloved Alex Trebek type. He wears a bow tie every show, and he wears a different bow tie, and he's been around for years. And so the Awkwafina character really, really loves him and looks up to him. And so you finally get to see him. What I liked about Will Ferrell's character in it, he doesn't get a chance to play such an understated role so often in still a comedy. It's not like it's a drama or something. And it's nice to see him bring it back in a little bit and not get so broad. He didn't have to take his shirt off. He didn't have to scream. He didn't have to be officially buffoonish. It was just the character, and there were some jokes for him, and they landed, and I liked it. It's not going to reinvent the wheel. It's not going to become everybody's favorite comedy, but I do think it's a movie that has the chance, if people watch it, this one also on Hulu, if people watch it, there's enough little tidbits in there and enough that stands out. It's visually, it's got some good parts that are, and they're different because they go to the stage for the quiz show. They go to Philadelphia at one point to try out for the quiz show. The gambling ring is the front of it is a dog rescue place. And so that's why they kidnap the dogs to get it back.
Oh.
Yeah. So, and there's a little twist on that I'll let you see if you get it. But my whole point is that I think if enough people watch this, there would be little things that might get picked out that might actually end up being that quote that people throw out, or, oh, remember in the movie when this happened? The only problem is it just doesn't happen on that macro level anymore. So we don't get that feeling where you can go, oh, he's the best kid alive. He's a cheetah from Superbad, where you can say that and people know what you're talking about. It's been probably over a decade since we've really had a movie that's been able to capture everybody to the point where you can throw something out there, unless it's like memeified online, but that's almost a whole separate thing. And I yearn for that. I miss that. The idea that everybody went and saw a comedy movie and then everybody knows the quotes from it. I want that back. I think this is a movie that could maybe have that, but I know it's not going to.
So that was a really great tangent. Question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you, or have you ever met someone who has been on Jeopardy?
No, I have not, but the way you ask it makes it sound like you have.
Two people.
Oh.
Very closely related to me.
Uncle Bob.
Correct.
I don't know the next one.
Nancy.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Both my grandpa's brother and sister, but not my grandpa, were on Jeopardy.
He could do it too.
Nancy won, I think.
She won?
Yeah, Nancy wanted, no. Uncle Bob won a couple days.
So he won multiple shows?
I believe so,
yes. Was it all... I know they film multiple shows in a day.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder how long he was out there for it.
Great question. My Uncle Bob... Now, everyone has an Uncle Bob, right? But I guarantee that my Uncle Bob is better than your Uncle Bob. He's the most elusive man.
I don't even know if we're allowed to talk about him. No, somebody might come get us.
The government might have something to say about that.
Yeah, I don't think we can offer too many details on
it. No, let's just say my Uncle Bob is a one of a kind.
Yes, for sure. I've never met him, but we've talked to him before.
Yeah, he's so elusive. Even Mark has. I could be making it up. You don't even know.
Everybody I know from your side of the family talks about him. And I've met Nancy, so there's the existence of the other sibling for Opa. So, I'm pretty sure he exists, but this is... I've probably seen a picture of him, but I, like, don't know what he looks like. I don't know off the top of my head, like,
there's actually who he is. A very famous picture of Uncle Bob and my Aunt Caroline crossing the Brooklyn Bridge after 9/11. Fun fact.
Not a fun fact.
Well, no. Fact. There are more fun facts, but for, I guess...
A few other things I wanted to get at. It's nice, especially like female-led, but especially Asian female characters are now getting, or movie makers really in general, are getting a chance to make movies starring, you know, themselves on screen now, because you've got Crazy Rich Asians a few years ago.
Crazy Rich Asians really did a lot for that community in the realm of Hollywood.
What was the road trip one we just
Joyride.
Joyride. That one I thought was fun. And it's not as raunchy as like American Pie, because I think we're kind of over like the gross out comedy world. But this one is rated R and like, yeah, it just gives you that little feel of like an adult comedy that you're watching, but from a different perspective that we haven't seen a lot of. So they played with that a little bit. There's a lot of like, is that racist? Or like the characters are doing that throughout. But there's one point where the Awkwafina character is so nervous when she's trying out for the quiz show that her sister gives her some sort of like MDMA type drug, and she's like tripping when she's up on the stage. Now, she still is spot on all her answers, but like things are going on. And at the end of each round, they flip a coin and you either show it or you say it for your partner to guess the answers to something. And show it as charades and say it as, you know, explain it in some way. And she doesn't want to do charades. So in that one, it comes up. And they flip the coin, and it's say it, and she's so excited. And I wrote down the quote. It says, "I can win, and now the clouds above won't die." And everybody's like, "What?" And then Sandra Oh's character stands up in the crowd of the auditorium, and she goes, "Oh, it's an ancient Chinese saying that we say." And everybody goes, "Oh," and nods their head, because she knows that she can just say that, and all the random people in there will just, "Okay." They'll just, "Yeah, that sounds right." So... I like that. Also, something that... So, at first, she has this neighbor character who's, like, real ornery and doesn't like living next to her. She's played by Holland Taylor. Her name is Francine. Holland Taylor is the professor, the lady professor in Legally Blonde, for reference that lady I think people professor. Would get. Yeah, there you go. And eventually, she does team up with her. But when she's in her house, there's a picture of Paul Rubens, who is Pee Wee Herman, who actually just passed away, right? Just a couple of months ago. And the Francine character thinks it's Alan Cumming, who's, you know him. He was in Good Omens, yeah. And he was in Spy Kids, actually.
He's in the movie with things, and it's not a movie. It's a show. It is called...
NCIS?
No. It's called with Elizabeth Taylor, and she's singing like this about... The Cabaret.
He's in Cabaret. He's also in Son of Mask. I don't think people...
Wow. What a pull. Son of Mask?
That's what it says.
Wow.
The reason why the neighbor character likes him is because it's The Good Wife. But I was also like, oh, okay. Like, they actually do look alike. I get the joke and stuff. It's just like unfortunate that they did that. And then Paul Rubens happened to die. But spoiler alert, don't... So if you really want it to be... a thing, it's just a joke that's in the movie, but turn it off now, I guess, for a few seconds. Paul Rubens shows up at the end, and she still thinks it's Alan Cumming, and she gets all excited and stuff. It's his final role.
Yeah, it's his last role. Yeah,
so when I saw that, I was like, this has to be his last role, and I looked it up. Paul Rubens' last role, Quiz Lady. Matter of fact, it is. So it was, I did not expect that going in. That had not been like in any of the advertising for it, but nice to see him one last time. R.I.P. Paul Rubens, Pee Wee Herman, gone too soon. When I quoted the Pee Wee Herman movie on that bachelor party, everybody looked at me like I was crazy.
Well, to be fair.
Well, I am crazy, but not because I know Pee Wee's Big Adventure. It's a very famous movie.
No, you're crazy for a multitude of reasons, not including that. Maybe including that. TBD.
One other thing for you on this. They're in Philadelphia, somewhere we've also visited, but this reminded me of something on our honeymoon. They go into this bar because she can't miss the the quiz show. She's seen it every day since she was 4 years old. And so they go into this bar that says the most TVs in Philadelphia. But of course, it's sports TVs. They're all on the Phillies game and nobody wants to change the channel and they can't get it, even though they recognize her because she goes viral because her sister films her watching the quiz show. But they don't want to change the channel. She's trying to get them to change the channel. They won't. And it reminded me of sometimes it is fun to watch non-sports in bars. And actually, I enjoy it without the sound.
No sound is the preferred way.
Do you know what story I was going to tell based on that distinction of a way to watch something in a bar?
I forget what movie it is. I want to say it's Jurassic World.
Correct.
When we were at the basement bar or whatever. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
On our honeymoon in Savannah. On our honeymoon
in Savannah.
And we watched like an hour of Jurassic World. And you know what? That movie's not that great. But when you don't have to listen to any of the talking or take in any of the acting, pretty nice to look at on a big projection screen.
Way better no sound. It's just fun because, especially one that you know, it's fun to like watch it and then listen to people talking about the movie also at the bar. Like,
yeah.
It's just a cool interaction.
So it starts with Jurassic Park. It ends with Jurassic World.
Well, I actually want to say something also. Okay. Things that I've been watching. Speaking of Sandra Oh, I'm almost done with Killing Eve.
Yes.
So we can chit-chat about Killing Eve a little bit maybe on this one if anyone's interested. If not, I'll just keep my thoughts in the confines of my mind. Go ahead.
What do you have to say about Killing Eve?
Well, I'm going to wait till it's over, but I'm almost done. I've got like one season left. It's not been a binge, but it's taking me a little while, but we're getting to the end.
Okay, so
very interesting show. If you like accents, if you like Sandra Oh, if you like murder.
So there's a hint of things to come. British also, people. We're staying up to date on Loki. Once that finishes, we'll talk about that on an episode. And Golden Bachelor will end soon.
Yep, and I also watched the first episode of A Lesson in Chemistry. A book I read for book club with our book club with wives.
So there's things you can look forward to on Chops TV. I hope you enjoyed this episode.
Yeah, someone convinced me that Apple TV is worth buying to watch the rest of the show because I am not sold yet.
Hit us up at _ChopsTV on Twitter or TikTok.
Bang, bang, bang.
Bang, bang, bang. Thanks for listening.
Chops TV is made possible by people who subscribe to podcasts and viewers like you.